CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Here it is, your Thursday morning edition of Gareth Cliff Show featuring Pumi Mashiko. There she is. I see her in the office again this morning, Pums. Is that a load shedding thing, or do you just have a bunch of things to do today? What is it? Hang on. Let me just turn this music down. Hang on. Wait a second. There we go. What were you saying?
I was thinking, do you see me in fancy shirts? The like bow and everything.
I do.
What this day is about.
Are you?
It's going to be a heavy day.
Back-to-back meetings and getting shit done, huh?
I have had such... So my head's like driving me crazy. I have had such crazy days. Such crazy days over the past... Yesterday, I had a meeting in Soweto. We were working on a project that's like bookshelves and libraries and townships in association with an alcohol company. And so we're going to be putting them near and in some of their taverns. And so we went to see a couple of these new taverns in Soweto.
Okay.
At 12.
Oh.
And we had to be at a presentation for another client at 3 in Kempton Park.
Oh, my God. Wow. Kempton Park. I'm so glad you're alive.
Kempton Park. So today's also one of those. We've got an 8:30 meeting. We've got an 11:30 meeting. We've got a 2 o'clock meeting. I just had to... And be in the office.
Well, listen, I mean, good for you. Getting shit done is like, that's the byline. That's the key word. That's what everybody should be doing at the moment. We have no time to bugger around. There's some very nice comments coming through about how you've dressed up for us this morning. Nell Silver says, Pumi, looking pretty this morning.
Thank you.
And Nika goes, oh shit, it's Thursday. I thought it was Wednesday. Well, I mean, this happened.
Nico.
So yeah, yesterday I was in a couple of meetings as well. I mean, yesterday and the day before were pretty busy for me too. On Tuesday, I pretty much did, not exaggerate, but about 8 hours in front of a microphone, which is a lot, you know. And you know, by the last kind of half hour, I was going like a zombie. But I did interview someone from the U.S. who I love talking to, a guy called Larry Elder, who is, he's an incredible guy, broadcaster, talk show host, documentary film producer, very recently political activist as well. He's a Republican, but a black guy who doesn't get a lot of love from the Al Sharptons and Jesse Jacksons of the world. So an interesting guy to talk to and has, you know, opinions that kind of get him put outside of the norm and the medium every other day of the week. What an interesting guy. We spoke for an hour and a bit.
Black people used to be Republicans. The Republicans don't forget to beat the slaves.
That's correct. So that's right.
It's how things change.
It was only since Johnson. Only since Johnson and Kennedy that really black people switched over to the Democratic Party.
This is why Condoleezza Rice, you know, those guys.
Colin Powell,
Colin Powell, what's his name, the musician, blind musician. All of those guys were very, very strong.
Is there Ray Charles, or are you talking about Stevie Wonder?
Ray Charles. That's because this is what the Republican Party used to stand for.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Abraham Lincoln, who freed the slaves, Republican. The Democrats in the South used to, there used to be a whole bunch of KKK members who were Democrats from the South.
They went to war.
That's right.
They went to war to stop.
That's right. So an interesting guy to talk to, and he has political ambitions too. I mean, he tried to recall the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and Larry Elder actually came in second in terms of the number of votes. Obviously, he didn't get 50 plus one to displace Gavin Newsom, but he got like between 3 and 4 million votes in the state of California. Sure. It wasn't even an election. It was just a recall. So that's incredible. I think he'll
by election.
Yeah, I think he'll do very well if he does run in California again. And you know, California really not a very red state by any stretch of the imagination. He most of the districts. I mean, he goes into some detail on this. So I'm not going to preempt the whole interview, but a really interesting guy.
Wow, can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was an interesting day, but I was talking about how busy it was. And then yesterday I was talking to somebody and I was like, oh, it's Thursday. And they were like, no, it's only Wednesday. So I know what it feels like to get your days screwed up, Nico, because you think, oh, wow, I've done so much. It must be Thursday already. And today is, so you can breathe a sigh of relief. Tomorrow, finally, the end of the week. Uh-huh. Yeah, I haven't done a Puzza Thursday in ages. I can't do it anymore.
shall I say it or will you? With the birthday coming up, Gareth, it's just the years ticking by.
Oh, I know. No, it's old age. It's definitely old age. Plus, I do not want to deal with a Friday morning show and then have a hangover. It's not worth it. It's not worth it, you know?
Listen, hangovers are just not worth it. Even a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning with a bit of a hangover is still...
Yeah.
It's not cool no more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, here's not some great news from Nico. He says the first mozzie arrived last night in the Swartberg. some cold front is pushing this heat wave on. Tomorrow we cuck of the cold again. Yeah, this is unfortunate, and I hate to blame the month of my birth, but August is the worst, because just when you think you're starting to come out of all the cold and the shit, then the wind picks up. That wind is icy. It brings in all this the shitty cold wind from, I don't know, the Antarctic or wherever it comes. Just screws up everything.
I told you guys last week, winter never leaves without drama.
Mm-hmm.
Winter never leaves without drama. There's always that last bit of like drama before it can be kind of sunny days. And here we are in the middle of that winter drama.
You're so right. So let's talk about a few things because we've got the burning platform later on. I think it's going to be the kind of burning platform a lot of people are going to be very interested in. It's very seldom that we get to do one or two issues in real detail. And we're going to be talking about these tavern shootings. We're going to be talking about crime. You've just been to a bunch of taverns, so you've seen a few of them, which you probably haven't for a very long time, Pums. I mean, you did grow up in Soweto, so you know the place. But, you know, they've suddenly become flashpoints. And we need to figure out what's going on over there because it's a very serious problem. I mean, if we were in any other country, the taverns would be front page news for weeks. But because we're in South Africa, they are already old news. And I mean, the number of people who were killed in those 2 weeks when we had this sudden outbreak, it was frightening and devastating, not only in the Eastern Cape, but up here in Gauteng as well. A lot of people very concerned about that. So we're going to speak to two guys who really are well-positioned to talk about this. Gideon Robert, who we've had on before, an independent security consultant and a firearm instructor. We've also talked to him about guns, which we can do again today. And Dr. Gerard Labuschagne, who's a clinical psychologist and a criminologist and an advocate of the High Court. We've spoken to him too. And between the two of them, we'll be able to put together some of the really important behind-the-scenes stuff that is going on. Also, we can talk about the anniversary of Marikana, which happened, you know, just this week, and something which, again, seems like just yesterday, but it was 10 years ago this week that the Marikana massacre happened.
You know, I was obviously because of all the work that we did there in 2017, 2018. This is, again, comes back to me all the time.
Yeah.
How that community, how that community is, and how I can't wait. I can't wait for the Burning Platform. We have so much to talk about. People must stay on. Or if you can't stay on, you have to hit the podcast, I think.
Well, the other thing that we want to do this morning is you want to just bring up something, because this is the kind of person you are. You've gone and done some research on qualifications that top employers around the world are looking for. And this could interest a few
people. So you remember, because we spoke about it last week, we spoke about the universities losing accreditation,
yes,
and some, and we spoke about humanities and what you call useless degrees, which grated my heart a little bit, because I'm a humanities sort of.
Me too. Me too. Yeah.
But also, I kind of, as I was thinking about it, so I thought I'm gonna like do a little bit of reading, do a little bit of research. Remember, I was telling you about PhDs, that I think we need more people who are knowledge creators. And the thing about research that you do for PhDs, that's what it does. You know, it adds to the knowledge base of a country. So I came across three things, which I thought, I'm going to take this back to Gareth. Mm-hmm. And the one was a Cambridge study about what it would take for Africa to compete, to become comparable. Is my Wi-Fi useless this morning? Someone is saying. Check it out just now.
It's the cables or the clicking of the mic, or I don't know what the hell's happening there, but it gets like this. Then sometimes it gets better and sometimes it gets worse. But just carry on. It's fine. We're going to have to manage.
And I've changed cables. Anyway, so the study that Cambridge did about what Africa needs to compete, not just with China or America, but with the rest of the world, and to pull itself out of the terrible situation that we're in, is that in the next 10 years, Africa will need, let me look at this number, 1 million new PhD researchers in all fields. In humanities, in science, in just to compete, simply because of the number of PhD studies that are coming from other countries, not just the US. I saw a tweet from the head of Ben Gurion University 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And they were graduating a class of 250 PhDs at Ben Gurion University.
Like, wow.
Israel is hardly the length of our country.
I know,
you know?
And doesn't have nearly the population. I mean, how good are we at churning out PhD students in South Africa? What are our numbers?
Not very good. Not very good. It has picked up. So kind of academia has picked up. We do have quite a number of people going all the way to PhD level, but not enough. Because if you look at this study and the numbers that, and then if you divide it across all the African countries, if everybody were to kind of contribute towards that, we here in South Africa should be churning out in the next 10 years something like 60,000 PhDs. Because we were talking about humanities, and I thought, but where do they go? Who employs PhDs, and what does this research go into? And one of the things that for me was mind-blowing. VW is hiring 490 PhDs and PhD candidates. Also, communications, human behavior.
Volkswagen.
Bringing in engineers. Volkswagen. But you know why?
No.
Because with artificial intelligence, driverless cars, all of those things and all of those changes, they need to understand human behavior better, and what it is that will make people comfortable to be in a driverless car.
Right.
What do you do in your car traveling somewhere and you're not driving? What do you do with all of that extra time?
Yeah.
What should be, you know, all of those things. So maybe
I'm just looking at this now, we have 26 universities, right? And this is just according to a quick search that I've done. A PhD is usually 2 to 3 years, and there are 40,712 students. So obviously we're not going to be producing that many PhDs, but I mean, we should be so lucky, right? But we have we seemingly have enough universities to be able to produce a fair number of these. Is it because not enough people study up to PhD level? Or is it because PhDs are too expensive to attain? Or is it because people...
Not enough people study to PhD level. Remember that we're also in an environment where quite a lot of people are kind of coming out of and dragging the rest of their families out of a poverty situation. So education is a pathway out of that. So they need to go and work. We also don't have enough kind of just wanting to do it. Not enough people wanting to study all the way to PhD. Yeah. Think about it.
Like, well, I mean, we can't even get high school kids to do maths and science, let alone study, you know, to PhD level, which obviously requires research. It's a much more complicated process than just getting a bachelor's degree and then saying, look, you can employ me.
But the fact that there is employment for people with PhDs across all fields. So linguistics, you know, natural language processing is a thing now. So how do you talk to your computer or to Siri so that they understand you and your language?
Huge.
You know, all of those things are, it's definitely a pathway. And over and above, so the 490 PhDs that they are hiring at VW is over and above the 300 that they are producing internally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite something. I mean, look, we are far behind. I mean, G-Star brings up here the book by David Benatar, and I've interviewed David Benatar about antinatalism before, which is really an area that he is world-renowned in and for. He's written a book called The Fall of Cape Town University. Frightening what's going on there. The book goes into detail about how the decolonization narrative has ruined UCT. Well, I must get him on the show. I mean, it would be someone that you'd also want to talk to, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So can you see, this is how my nerding, over and above all of the other things, this is how the nerd in me. Because I couldn't after last week's show.
I love this.
But there was also blowback. There was blowback about the shutting down of universities or decommissioning. Told you, it's bullshit.
I know, for sure.
They are up to some shit.
But Kapamba says, quite rightly, nobody wants to stay in varsity for 7-8 years. We want money. I think that's what a lot of people think, that, you know, you go into university because you want to get a degree so you can get a job so you can earn money. And you have to be in a very unique situation to be able to put yourself into academia for almost a decade in order to attain these kinds of qualifications. Super Jacob Zuma says, first world countries fund PhDs and pay students while studying. We give minimal stipends.
Yeah, but this is what I was about to say, that, you know, you don't have to be a full-time student. You just simply have to want it and you have to have the commitment. In the past 3 months, I have been to two PhD graduation. I told you guys about the one with the guy with his maths. The guy is married and three kids. So he has a job. He has work.
Right.
But he also studied towards this PhD.
Yeah, Colleen.
You know, so it's about more than just.
Colleen says quite rightly that research supervision capacity is also lacking in these universities. You know, you need a supervisor for a PhD, and sometimes there just aren't people in numbers enough to allow for these kinds of degrees to be pursued.
This was also in that Cambridge study, that's definitely one of the things, that there's not enough mentors and there are not enough supervisors to help accelerate the progress for students in Africa.
You know, this is not to fill from the back when it comes to like defending a position that I took, which is quite controversial, that we don't all need to be at university studying humanities degrees. PhDs are a different matter entirely, a different kettle of fish. And I think that, you know, if you're going to go and study to PhD level, which I would advise anyone who really, really is interested in a particular subject to do, if you can possibly do it. And obviously developing a body of knowledge, particularly stuff that is useful here in South Africa and in Africa, would be great. There are so many areas that are not nearly as well explored, as well researched, and as well put together as we would like. And stuff that no one else in the world can do, you know, particularly around our indigenous languages, our own history, our own ability to figure out resources versus energy versus, I mean, there's so many things.
Our communities.
Yeah.
Our communities. Can you imagine the kind of studies that we could have just talking about artificial intelligence and driverless cars, about the behavior of groups of people in people carriers or people movers that are driverless.
Taxis,
right?
Yeah.
So in a taxi. Mm. In a taxi
but you know
have
what?
10 people.
I'm also thinking that what you spoke about last week when you told us about these tribal councils and how that could be, you know, again, these are not areas that are pursued with any, you know, massive volume at tertiary education levels. We tend to take our lead from other countries. We tend to take our lead from countries like America or the UK or, you know, and maybe a little bit of Israel, but maybe we should be looking at developing some of these. Nevertheless, to go back to the point, I do think that a lot of people go, they study a degree because they feel they have to get a degree to do something. They do it to bachelor's level, like I did, and it's a waste of time. That is a waste of time. But if you're going to take it further, absolutely. G-Star says agreed. Pumi was onto something there. So yeah, absolutely, with the tribal councils, I think. And Pichleng says, the interest to study PhD is there, but many universities simply do not have enough support for those students at that level. Mm-hmm. Also, many end with the first degree because funding is not there. That's also true.
It's true. This is definitely...
Yeah. Congo Chris says...
Definitely one of the barriers.
I was fortunate enough to have been both a student and a first tutorial leader at university. The overwhelming narrative was that half the students weren't there to study or even attend class. Well, we know that university becomes like an extension of adolescence for a lot of people too. You know, they don't necessarily have a place to go to and a meal and security and, you know, a home where they're not going to be abused or whatever. So university becomes that surrogate for a little bit longer, which, I mean, in this country, it shows you how society is a problem. That's not the university's fault, but they do become like a nanny for a lot of kids who are extending their adolescence in South Africa. And that's why we see so many of them behaving like that when it comes to university politics. And that's a quality of university politics, is that it must be a little bit fiery, a little bit young, a little bit idealistic. That's always the case at universities all over the world. But in South Africa, it has become kind of like the state looking after people's adult children for a little bit longer than they maybe should. And that's controversial, but it's worth bringing up.
Those are the areas we need to be studying too, understanding a little bit more about our communities and why they are broken in the way that they are so that we can fix it.
Oh, yeah. Carl says, what's the difference between a BA and a large pizza? The pizza can feed a family of four.
And the way you're buying the pizza, Carl.
Yeah, because, I mean, one pizza could barely feed me.
It definitely doesn't feed Kanejo.
No. Oh, my God. No. No, growing young men, the one pizza is not enough. All right, listen, we got to get into some news headlines. It's already 6:30.
I had three at my house for the past 4 days.
Three young men. Boys. Oi, you're in trouble. You had to feed all three of them.
Mm-mm. I haven't gotten over the food bill.
All right, so here's a story.
I might need another job.
We all need another job, considering what's happening to our money at the moment. So this is something that comes up every year. It's a bit early, I'll admit, for us to be thinking about this, but Mariah Carey, why does she come up every year? Because of Christmas, right? So a dispute has broken out over which U.S. pop singer can lay claim to the title Queen of Christmas after Mariah Carey attempted to trademark that. Elizabeth. Someone called Elizabeth Chan, who exclusively performs Christmas music, has filed a formal objection to Mariah Carey's claim. The fellow singer Darlene Love took to Facebook to say that she's been the queen of Christmas since way before Mariah Carey rose to fame. Kerry's representatives have not responded to requests for comment. The trademark bid was filed in March 2021, but has only recently been made public. It is still under consideration. Now, of course, Mariah Carey's 1994 album Merry Christmas is one of the best-selling Christmas albums of all time. We all know the reason she makes it into the news every year is because All I Want for Christmas Is You, which is her hit song, became a classic staple of the holiday season. It has reached the top spot in charts all over the world almost every year since 1994 and continues to be one of the favorites. It gets used in movies and all over the place. Now, Mariah Carey, who is 53, has produced several other Christmas... Yeah, 53. I know. These kinds of things scare the hell out of me. Mariah's 53 years old. She has produced several other Christmas-related singles and regularly gives guest performances. Darlene Love is 81, and she recorded the song Christmas Baby Please Come Home in 1963. So she says, I've been there longer than Mariah Carey. I am the queen of Christmas.
Longer than Mariah's been alive.
No, no. So she uses as her authority on this. She says, David Letterman officially declared me Queen of Christmas 29 years ago, a year before she released All I Want for Christmas Is You. She added, at 81 years old, I ain't changing anything. I've been in the business for 52 years and have earned it and can still hit those notes. I wonder if that's a, that's a stab at Mariah, who we know doesn't even try for the high notes anymore. She just goes, ugh, and lets the audience do them. Anyway, Elizabeth Chan, who's the other one, so these three women all going for this title, she says, I am the queen of Christmas. She says, Christmas is for everyone, and I feel strongly no one person should hold on to anything around Christmas in the way that Mariah seeks to, in perpetuity, she said. That's not the right thing to do. Christmas is for everyone. It's meant to be shared. It's not meant to be owned. So, big fight between these three women.
I vote for the 81-year-old.
I think so, too. Just by virtue of the fact
always
that
she... Always age before beauty.
Right. She's been there the longest, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Always age before beauty. 81. That's who I vote for. Christmas.
Well, Boiled Prawn Shack says, I'm sorry, but Boney M. are the royal family of Christmas. Mariah, what? That's true. Can't argue with that, right? That's true.
Let me just look at this. It's the 18th of August. Oh, dear. And we're already talking about Christmas carols.
I know. That's going to happen before you even know it. And Jade Naidu wants to say, have we started defrosting Michael Bublé? I wonder what he will have to say about this. And then Steve E. says, I still think Elton John is the real Christmas queen. See? There's a lot of... Yeah, Matthew says, I think Mary of Nazareth deserves a shout, you know, because the whole giving birth to Jesus thing. It's a good point. Yeah. Listen, I don't disagree that Mariah has kind of become, in some ways, you know, every Christmas, that's when she makes all of her money for the whole year. Mariah doesn't have to do anything except have All I Want for Christmas Is You, and she makes all her money. Right?
Except this year I read a thing about her making more money in the lead up, you know, because everybody always jokes about Mariah Carey making all this money over Christmas.
Yeah.
But this year I read something about her kind of, I don't know, she made some kind of comeback and was the royalties that she brought in this mm-hmm. year for all the other stuff seems kind of into that space even before the Christmas rush.
Well, who knows? But I mean, she does make it. She makes a huge amount of money out of that song. That's no doubt, right?
Yeah, that's what you know. That's what I'm a widget. Something that'll just like keep churning money ever for no reason other than the fact that it's that time of the year.
Absolutely.
Think about this. What can we do? What do we do? What
you
can
remember
we make
Hugh Grant in About a Boy? The whole character was based on this dude who wrote a jingle for like some kind of product.
Yeah.
And he got paid so much money for writing that one jingle. That was all he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's That's what we need, like something like that.
Mm, absolutely.
Maybe something that we can lend to taxis.
So
we should think about this.
So here's something. Elon Musk has got to stop doing this. He's such a troll on social media. So he joked about buying Manchester United. You know, he joked about it. He said it's a long-running joke. He said he was kidding when he said he was going to buy English soccer club Man United. But their stock jumped more than 3% following his tweet. Trading volume for shares in the sports club skyrocketed to more than double their daily average. And that was all just because Elon Musk said this. He said, you know, I'm thinking maybe I should buy Man United just to help them with their stock price. And then he said, no, it's a long-running joke on Twitter. I'm not buying any sports teams. And then by then, you know, the damage was done. So it shows you, first of all, how powerful he is, that he can get the stock to jump by 3% in a joke. And it also shows you that he hasn't got enough to do with all of his different jobs, that he's still tweeting. I mean, I think he's just having fun here. He doesn't care anymore. He's like, he's just playing.
This morning, he woke up a tweet that Elon Musk saying, motherhood is the best career, or something like that.
Motherhood.
This guy, someone must take his phone. Someone must hide his phone.
Right. So,
or at least make it like the president's phone where you can't really do much with it.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if Cyril knows how to use Twitter properly. Someone else does that for him, but it's better that way. Onkopotse says, Elon should joke about buying South Africa, then our stock price would rise. I think everybody knows that's bullshit. I think everybody gets that. Mm. All right, then, speaking of the president, Pumi, here's a headline that we need to pay attention to. According to Julius... the president has a case to answer, and various opposition parties have sought a motion of no confidence in Cyril, being led by the EFF in this case. The political parties, which include the EFF, UDM, COPE, PAC, and ACDP. Interesting. These are not the usual suspects.
Oh, Meshwe.
Yeah. Meshwe. Kenneth Meshwe is in there, PAC, COPE.
President.
But is COPE still... Please, someone answer me.
A thing.
Is it a thing? And who is the leader of COPE at the moment? And why do we keep on talking to them like they're a real party? Who's in charge of COPE, Pumi?
It's Terra.
Is it Terra Lekota?
It's Terra.
Is it?
I think Musiwa Lekota is still the head over there. After he wrestled it away from Bazima.
Oh, my God. Anyway, these parties have all said that they're going to table a motion of no confidence, and they're going to hold Cyril accountable for the Palapala farm scandal. You know what irritates me about this is that there's such a poverty mindset in these people who are so blown away by the money he kept in his sofa. You know, on paper, Cyril's worth billions, and this $4 million is nothing to him. It's like if you and I leave R100 in our jackets, and then we don't put that jacket on for a couple of weeks. And then we put that jacket on and we find R100 and we go, oh, yay, extra R100 I didn't know I had. That's what it's like for Cyril. Now, I'm not defending him. I'm not News 24. Okay. And we know you and I are not, we have not given him an easy ride on this show. It seems to me like these little parties and these small minded people who think that R4 million is a lot of money to Cyril, they just don't know what a lot of money is. And they're obsessed with this story because, to my mind, the biggest issue around Cyril is how he's mismanaged the ANC, how he's allowed a deterioration in the public service, how he was sitting there as the deputy during the Zuma years, and he seems to get a casual kind of acceptance from everybody. I don't think that this Palapala is a big deal. That's his money anyway. That's not the is that the most controversial thing we could say about Cyril? What do you think?
Well, it's not the most controversial thing that we could say about Cyril, but it does do a number of different things for all of these individuals, right? So one, it's given the EFF its one trick back.
Yeah.
Because I guys years ago that they only have one trick, and their one trick was get Jacob Zuma out of there. Mm-hmm. Now it's given them another a new lease on their trick. Now they just get Cyril out of here,
yes.
Right? It's giving all of these people stuff to talk about and the wrong stuff to talk about. None of them are talking about what should be talked about. And what should be talked about is how do we move forward?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to where we need to get to? But it's nice. You see, it's distracting to have all of this.
By the way,
Cyril must go.
Yeah, and Carl says quite rightly, it's $4 million, not rands. But either way, Zuma was raping and pillaging and they just left him. Again, $4 million even to Cyril is nothing. He's a billionaire. $4 million is pocket change to him. I promise you, this is not a big deal. And because they found it on his private property in his own furniture, it's a stupid place to store money. He obviously has too much money. But this is not the big... It's not the biggest story in the world. If Palapala is the reason that you're tabling emotion and no confidence, I'd be horrified to think about what else distracts you. And I think it's small-mindedness. I really do.
Look, and of all the people talking about Palapala, all the things they could be speaking about, they're not even talking about the pertinent things, questions that nobody is asking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, money was in the sofa. We've spoken about this.
It's done
how
now.
Was this money in the sofa? Was it like, was it sewn into the cushion? And why was it sewn into the cushions?
Yeah.
Where was this money coming from or going to? What?
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's lots of things that they could be talking that could give them a real leg.
But they're not.
But they're not.
No. So let's turn our attention further afield. In England and Britain more generally, inflation has surged to a new 40-year high. On rising food prices, official data showed on Wednesday that the cost of living crisis, that's what they're calling it, it's not a cost of living crisis, everybody. It is a cost of lockdown crisis. That is what this is. Don't be under any illusions. There hasn't been a sudden crisis in the cost of living. The reason that we've got a cost of living problem is because supply chains were disrupted, the economies of the world were put on hold. All of this is reaping the whirlwind of those 2.5 years where we were unable to normally transact, do normal business. Did you think that wasn't going to come with a cost? So they're calling it a cost of living crisis. But that's politics. They're trying to spin it. It's actually the cost of lockdown crisis. So the consumer price index accelerated to 10.1% last month from 9.4% in June. This is a 40-year record. The last time this happened was 40 years ago. The Bank of England warned that earlier this month, inflation would climb to just over 13% this year, which is the highest since 1980. 1980.
Sure.
That was like a year after Margaret Thatcher became prime minister. It is projected that the country will enter a recession that would last until late 2023. And the finance minister, Nadeem Zahawi, said that, I understand that times are tough. People are worried about increases in the price of, in the prices that countries around the world are facing. Getting inflation under control is my top priority, he said, and we are taking action through strong independent monetary policy, responsible tax, and spending decisions. Well, someone should have thought of that during lockdowns. Do you agree with me, Pumi? That's what it is. We're now bearing the responsibility of some bad decisions that were made 2 years ago. That's all there is.
You know, just talking about inflation and the naming of things, and whether it's the cost of living or cost of lockdown. Did you see, young Joe Biden signed off his $430 billion climate, healthcare, and inflation?
Oh, no, no. But they're calling it the Inflation Reduction Act. And it does nothing.
It's for everything.
It does nothing to reduce inflation. I mean, by definition, right? Inflation can only happen in one place. Remember, Thomas Friedman is one of the most famous economists of all time. He said there is only one institution that can create inflation, and that institution is the government, because they can print currency. That is what inflation is. There's no other definition. So if you want to reduce inflation, stop printing money. So what does Joe Biden do? What does his government do after already pumping trillions, not billions, trillions of dollars into the economy, which is precisely why the whole world now is feeling the repercussions of that irresponsible fiscal policy. Now, he thinks we're stupid enough to buy, because honestly, if this Biden regime has done anything, they have proven that they have no faith in the ordinary human being. They have no trust in us at all. They think we're all complete idiots, and they can sell us any kind of spin that they like. So he's called this the Inflation Reduction Act. But all it is even more spending. Which means what? Means printing money. Which means what? Means more inflation. There is nothing in this bill that reduces inflation. And you know what they did? They only said that. They only admitted that after they'd passed the bill. And then he was going around. Then he's going around saying, this will finally give me the chance to deliver on the promises I made with regard to environmental policy. Well, no one elected you on environmental policy. And they've done polls in America in the last couple of weeks, which I would cite if they were here with me at the moment. But these are things that I've been paying attention to for weeks now. They've cited polls where the environment isn't even in the top 20 things that the average American is concerned about right now. They're worried about the cost of living. They're worried about the cost of food, the cost of petrol, the supply chain crisis. That's what people care about.
So here's the thing that I absolutely love about what this is, right? This bill in particular is it is an absolute demonstration of how politics works, and more importantly, how horse trading in politics works. Mm-hmm. Because the reason they allow it to be called the inflation bill is because is what is top of mind for everybody is inflation, right? But actually, that's just the name of it. And underneath is all of this other stuff. It's climate, it's healthcare, it's a catch-all for everything. But in order to get it passed, they just rebranded it.
Correct.
An inflation bill. And now, of course, everybody signs it off and passes it through. And now it is signed into law.
Absolutely.
And this for me is one of the things that our favorites here in the country are really failing to activate.
Who?
As we see all of the coalition politics in all of these, in Tswade, in KZN, in Ekuruleni, as we see all these, opposition politics play into each other, but also the coalitions kind of struggle to make things work. It's because the guys don't know how to horse trade and politic the way that they should be.
Yeah, but also, so in Tswane, which is obviously it's my municipality, and I have been hopeful that they would be able to sort themselves out. There is a coalition which has been in place for a while now. I've seen that Herman Mashaba has just pulled out of that coalition, which is going to put my municipality back into disarray, where we're not going to have the right people running things, which they've been trying to run. I mean, under the DA and that DA coalition, they managed to not only wipe out all Tswane's debt because the municipality was in huge debt, they also managed to fix that billing crisis, which had been going on here, just like it has in Durban. And now, thanks to Herman Mashaba, it's all a disaster again. So if Herman Mashaba wants me to vote for Action SA, he better figure out how to do coalitions better. He better figure out that, to me, service delivery is more important than any of his other politics. And right now I'm looking at Herman Mashaba in my own municipality when it comes to, our local elections. And I'm thinking, actually, he's disrupting. He's not helping. Why would I vote for him? So here are a list of America's top concerns. This is from the Statista Global Consumer Survey. This is the share of U.S. adults who say that the following are among the most important issues that need to be addressed in the U.S. The first and most important issue, 44.3% of people agree that inflation and the cost of living is the number one thing. Second biggest is health and social security at 39.7%, still trailing quite a long way behind inflation. Then the economic situation, which you could also say is the same as the first issue, that's 39.7%. After that, at 36.2%, crime, then unemployment at 33%, then poverty at 32.4%, then education. Only then does climate change come in. And climate change is ahead of immigration and housing. But those are the top issues for Americans right now, according to the latest survey. So don't tell me.
But they sound a lot like the top issues for South Africans.
They are. And this is the problem, right? I mean, all over the world, we are looking at these countries in Europe who are going to be facing their own energy crisis in the next while, who are going to probably have load shedding for the first time. We look at water issues in the UK at the moment. They're going to supposedly switch off my water from Friday until Tuesday, either for a short period or for a long period. I don't know. But I might have to come and shower at your house, Pums. But in Britain at the moment...
Yay! Don't you have a gym membership?
Oh, I can go to the gym. That's right. But they probably won't have water either. So Britain at the moment is going through water rationing. So these are things that are happening all over the world now because politicians have mismanaged everything. It is politicians. They have made their local problems global problems. This is what globalism gets you. You want the good, but you don't want the bad? Sorry, that's not how it works. The globalists everywhere have made these problems our problems. They've found problems and spread them around the globe instead of finding solutions and spreading them around the globe. So here's a brereakdown. $60 billion in that bill of Biden's is for environmental justice programs. Now, what the fuck is environmental justice?
What is that?
Exactly. It's spin, right? Either it's got to do with his equity policies, which are just pure socialism.
Do you think it's going to go into NGOs that are going to come and tell Africans
how probably
they misuse cleaner energy?
Probably. They'll probably be telling us
NGOs.
Yeah, probably. So that's outrageous. $60 billion for environmental justice. Now, I want to know how it is possible for congressmen and women of good conscience, if they are those kinds of people, to pass this kind of thing. I mean, we know that Joe Manchin, who was the senator from West Virginia, he's the one who got some little piece of the pie for West Virginia. He went along with all this shit. He was standing against all of this for the longest time. $27 billion is for, listen to this, green banks. Now, what is that? Green banks.
I just Googled what is environmental, and the very next word that comes up is justice.
Oh, yeah. And what does it say?
So clearly everyone's Googling what is environmental justice.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
Department of Energy. Fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income, with respect to, this is the Department of Energy in the States. Oh, no, it's too long.
It's such bullshit.
It's too long. Implementation and enforcement.
Listen to this.
Of environmental.
You're going to love this.
Regulations, policies.
Listen to this, Pumi. $3 billion, okay? $3 billion is going to
How
be...
How many?
$3 billion is going to be spent on green postal vehicles. The vehicles that deliver post. This is in the government, not DHL or FedEx or any of these courier companies who are already doing whatever they can to be ahead of the curve. For the U.S. Postal Service, a government department, to have cars that are electric, they're going to spend $3 billion. By the way, that electricity for your electric car, do you think that's coming from fresh air? Do you think it's all solar and wind? I got bad news for you. It isn't. And just to give you a little idea of how stupid this bill is, $7,500 each is a tax break that they will give to rich people who want to buy electric vehicles. Because this is not for poor people. No poor people in America are buying electric vehicles. None. So if you're rich and you're already buying a Tesla or one of the other electric vehicles, they'll give you a $7,500 tax break as a part of this bill so that you can buy your electric vehicle, pat yourself on the back, do a little bit of virtue signaling, and tell everybody you're saving the environment at your cocktail party. It is outrageous that the Democrats have become a party that cares this little about ordinary people. Joe Biden should be ashamed of himself. It's outrageous. It really is. And of course, when you give people a tax break of $7,500, you idiots, what do you think happens? Well, I'll tell you what happens. The manufacturers just increase their prices. That's all. They go, oh, well, government's putting $7,500 in for each car. We'll make them $7,500 more expensive. Ka-ching. Easy government money, right? So there we go.
Thanks.
There's a little breakdown for you. I didn't think I'd go on a rant about Joe Biden for 5 minutes, but you could see how stupid this is, right? Stupid, stupid, stupid. Put more money into the economy. That's not inflation. No. What happens when you put more of something into a closed system? Then the price, the value of that something becomes less. I'm not even an economist and I can understand this. Has nobody in the White House got more than three brain cells to rub together? Unbelievable. And I know it's not
You're
Joe Biden.
You're just a humanities graduate.
Exactly. But it's not Joe Biden because Joe Biden is, he doesn't know whether he's coming or going, whether he's a teapot or a hockey stick. He thinks he's at Disneyland. So it's got to be someone else there that's as stupid as that. Anyway, let's leave it alone. There's some info for you, a couple of headlines. When we come back in the next hour, it is the Burning Platform. I'm thrilled that we will have two people on to discuss something we've wanted to talk about in detail for some time. We'll talk to Gideon Joubert and we'll talk to Dr. Gerard Labiskagni about this and a whole lot more. Stick around. CliffCentral.com. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.